essentially you're only as good as your base, and I think that applies to pretty much everything in life. You know, we look at the base as just, I mean, the most crucial part of the developmental process. I mean, there's other pieces that are very important, but from at least from our experience, from a throwing perspective, how you build up is huge.
You know, it's that guy that wants to work all the time. And in reality, what he probably needs to do is, instead of taking a fitness solution to a fatigue problem, he needs to figure out how to optimize recovery.
Most people are trying to do too much stuff in the weight room, too much stuff long toss, too much stuff weighted balls, throwing too many bullpens. They lose the feel of their sliders, so they throw, you know, 150 sliders over like 3 days. They're always trying to play catch up and not just trusting that it's a long process and there's always going to be bumps in the road.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina. And if you were just searching around to find a podcast with three rock stars all on the same call, boom, you found it with today's show. So thanks for dialing back into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and this terrific information coming your way soon. And supporting our podcast are our proud partners and great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. And we have a special segment for our loyal listeners today. At the end of this episode, we check in with the legendary Gene Stevenson from Wichita State University, who is part of the first college baseball field to don an AstroTurf surface. We get that entire backstory, plus his insight into how AstroTurf can help change your facility. So stay tuned into the show for that one, guys. Now, this is an important time of the year for baseball, with our traditional high school and college seasons winding down, and we're staring down June, July, and August, where travel baseball hits its stride, along with professional baseball as well. And at the forefront of every player and their families, every coach managing a staff, but also a roster of players, is arm health and development. Keeping these players healthy and thriving throughout the summer, yes, but what about training from a year-round perspective? And we rounded up three of the experts in their particular fields with the founder of Jaeger Sports and the godfather of the long toss program, Alan Jaeger, the founder of Cressy Sports Performance and one of the thought leaders in the strength and conditioning world, Eric Cressy, and also the founder of Driveline Baseball and one of the leaders in the data-driven approach to development, Kyle Bodie. All three tremendous minds are on the same call as we dive right into the keys to development and training. We talk through the off-season buildup and into in-season training and maintenance, taking us all through navigating the summer, and we wrap up this terrific call discussing the effects and insight of training into the college commitment, but also the MLB draft worlds. Now, Alan, Eric, and Kyle are outstanding in this interview. This is a must-listen for every coach interested in hearing from three resident experts in their field on how we should tackle a year-round approach to training the arm. You're in for a treat today, guys, with this awesome episode as we talk with Alan Jaeger, Eric Cressy, and Kyle Bodie, all on today's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. This great interview is coming at you right now. Coaches, we know you clicked into this show because we've got three rock stars lined up. And I have to say, this is the second time that we've put three different guys on a call that I've had to bring in the ABCA fire extinguisher, because there's a great chance my computer just burst into flames with the knowledge that's getting ready to come through this podcast. And we're excited to welcome in, first and foremost, Alan Jaeger, the founder of Jaeger Sports. Alan, thanks for being on the call with us.
Sheets, great to be on, man, and just appreciate you doing this. What can I say, man? I'm excited to be on this with Eric and Kyle and rock and roll, buddy.
Absolutely. And also from Cressy Sports Performance, Eric Cressy. Eric, thanks for being back on our show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be back.
And a first-time caller but a long-time listener, we're excited to welcome in from Driveline Baseball, Kyle Bodie. Kyle, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Jeremy. I really appreciate it, and just can't wait to get going. It's a great staff, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. So we're going to talk through, again, guys, our listeners at home, we're going to be talking through a lot of arm care development, and we're really working to hit three different sides of this conversation. This should be an action-packed and highly concentrated information that comes out of this for you guys. And where we want to kind of start is we want to give everybody an equal playing field of what's been going on, but how these people got to these points in their career. So, Alan, I want you to kind of kick this off on two fronts. Your career through baseball, again, is as almost as brief as you can get through 30 years in the game, but also go back to what's been really keeping you busy this spring.
Well, I guess in a nutshell, you know, I was a pitching coach for 3 years at a junior college from 1990 to 1992. And the next real big thing that happened is I interned with Rich Hill at Cal Lutheran in 1992. God, this sounds like such a long time ago. And that was when I really got to spend a full year with a team and do a lot of mental work. And I had already been involved with arm care and bands, and well, not the band yet, but long toss. And then I went to Chatham in 1992 with Rich. And that just felt like it opened up a whole nother window for me. And so I guess in a nutshell, you know, it was sort of a merging of being a pitching guy, specializing in throwing and arm care and mental game. And eventually I got into yoga. And after 1993, I basically just decided to, you know, open up my own world like Eric and Kyle you know, just be more of an independent guy. And it's just been great because I feel like as a coach, I was talking to someone yesterday. I'm up here in Corvallis right now, and I was talking to one of the players and just saying, you know, actually one of the coaches, I said, you know, when you're a coach around 15 guys, it's just great to buff out 15 guys. It feels really good. But when you're independent, you can reach so many more people. So that's sort of been my path. As far as what I've done this spring, you know, other than really spending some time out in spring training, you know, I haven't done a whole lot. I've gone to a few of Hunter Green's games, which has been fun to watch him live. And I'm up here right now in Corvallis doing some stuff as well. And just doing my best to try to be available as well for, you know, from just a consultant point of view. But, you know, I know Eric and Kyle get super busy at their facilities. And for me, I think a lot of it's either just emails, phone calls, Twitter, but just try to be as good of a resource as I can. So it's sort of a catch me up.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thanks for diving into that for us. And Eric, same question. Kind of talk us through your career in baseball, but then what kind of keeps you busy here during the season? What have you been up to lately?
Well, my full-time role is actually president of the Alan Jaeger fan club. but aside from that,
doesn't pay very much.
Actually, yeah, it took me, I took a much more roundabout path, I think, to baseball. I'm more of an outsider. I was actually a much better tennis player, growing up, and some of the nasty shoulder problems I encountered in that world were what prepared me, I think, for dealing with a lot of these guys and eventually becoming a shoulder guy. I meant becoming an elbow guy as well. And, you know, things kind of snowballed from starting with a high school clientele, you know, back in the mid 2000s, into a college and a professional clientele. And we expanded to the point where we have a facility about 40 minutes west of Boston, and then a second location that opened up in 2014 down in Jupiter, Florida. So I think the roles have definitely kind of evolved over the years, where, you know, historically we'd go like gangbusters with our pro crowd and things would quiet down in Massachusetts, you know, once those guys all reported to spring training, and then the high school baseball season would start here the third Monday in March. Now, because of the second facility, there really isn't necessarily that much of a quiet period. I'm in Florida basically late September all the way through the middle of April, and I'm back in Massachusetts from mid-April until the end of September. So I kind of go where the baseball guys go. I stick around in Florida so I can still see a lot of our guys during spring training. And then once I get back up here, we have this, you know, 2 to 3 weeks just to gather our thoughts and prepare for a mad college rush, because basically New England is kind of like the baseball capital of the world in the summertime between the Cape and all the collegiate leagues that take place up here. And, you know, obviously guys who decide to take the summer off and train with us as well. So we have a good time. We try not to take ourselves too seriously. And, you know, unlike Alan, I think it obviously leads into a lot of opportunities, whether it's consulting or, you know, writing articles or being active on social media or speaking at seminars. So the schedule certainly stays full regardless of where I am and what time of year it is.
Awesome. Thanks for opening that up as well. And Kyle, lastly, your career path in baseball, and then obviously what's keeping you busy there at Driveline, especially this spring as we're looking towards the summer months?
Yeah, no, my path to baseball is a little unconventional. I'm not sure if I've ever told Eric this, but I was also a tennis player in high school. I was a much better tennis player than I was baseball, and had issues, played both, had elbow issues and some shoulder issues. Really fell in love with the game through college. Came out to Seattle. I was from Cleveland, Ohio. Went out to Seattle when I was 22. Started coaching the Middle League in high school. Just something to do. And really kind of got deep into the science and the medical side of it. Eric and Pete, his business partner, have been huge influences of mine for a long time. Pete actually answered a lot of really awesome questions I had about 8, 9 years ago. And it's really shaped their business significantly. So I have them to thank a huge amount for that. Then we became sort of weighted ball experts in a sense, in that we were using them, and pretty much everybody was and has for decades, but we were really the first to document a lot of the progress online, really do like kind of data-driven test retest cycles, take like a very iterative approach to it, which I think was pretty unique. And it just ended up getting some traction, and kind of just like Eric said, you work with a couple high school kids or college kids and they do well. And over the years, word kind of gets out. In 2012, I spoke at Ron Wolfhard's boot camp a year after Eric did. And that really helped kind of get my name out there, because what we were doing was a little bit different than what the other coaches had been doing. Mm-hmm. And then we started training some of our first pro guys. Two of the first pro guys we trained ended up, you know, getting into the big leagues. Ryan Buckner for the Padres, Caleb Coffin with the Yankees at the time. And then we worked with Trevor Bauer and a few other guys. Started picking up some consulting jobs with MLB teams. And right now, you know, we have three separate buildings inside one complex in our Seattle facility kind of area. And that's kind of what we do. We carry out a lot of sports science research and work with teams and individual players, college summer ball, and the pro off season. So it just depends on what time of the year, but it's kind of busy, you know, year round, just depending on where we're at.
That's outstanding. And again, listeners, this is so unique in that you've got three experts in their field, and they're all somewhat distinct, but they all intermingle and cross over. And so where we're going to kind of kick this off, really staying close-knit to their experience and their expertise. And Eric, I want you to start this question for us. If you could, from your perspective, could you give us a starting point as to what the keys are for arm health and development from your training perspective?
I think at the end of the day, for me, it all comes back to really two things. It's one, it's individualization. So understanding what's unique about how you move. You know, are you a tight arm? Are you a loose arm? What's your injury history? You know, mechanically, what do you need to work on? What level of, you know, basically training focus can you handle? Like, you know, do you have a high work capacity? Are you have limited exposure to training? So I think understanding that individualization side of things with a thorough assessment and a really like comprehensive health history, training history, all that stuff is step one. And then I think point number two is synergy. Is, you know, there are good ideas, but there aren't great ideas if they're all combined together, right? So you have to see how all the different pieces fit together, you know, so that may be how your strength training works on a 5-day rotation when you're just trying to get back and ready to pitch again. Where does the manual therapy come in? You know, where does the soft tissue work you do on your own come in? You know, are you a guy that likes to use, you know, Mark Pro, or are you a guy who likes to ice? You know, there are a million different ways to kind of attack all these different facets, but I think the thing that a lot of people lose track of is how do those pieces all fit together? So, you know, I think historically one of the most challenging athletes that we've ever worked with is the athlete who's gotten a grasp on the individualization side of things, but what they've done is they've drawn from 15 different philosophies. You know, maybe they've gone out and trained with Kyle for 2 months. Maybe they've gone to, you know, Ron Wolfhorst for a couple months. Maybe they've done some balance camps. Maybe they've come and trained with us for a month, and all of a sudden there's, you know, seven or eight different overarching philosophies that are all being blended together, and pretty soon they're doing 7 hours of mobility work a day, and they're doing long toss, weighted balls, everything imaginable on top of bullpens, and they don't understand how all the pieces fit together. So I think you individualize, you educate, but you also make people aware of how all those pieces fit together for a comprehensive training effect.
And Kyle, same type question. Again, just from your expertise, just give us a starting point on what you think the keys are for arm health and development from a training perspective.
For us, it always starts just with the projected load on their arm for the year and where they're at developmentally. So if they're 14 or 16, you know, their work capacity is probably not as high and their strength levels are probably too low. And so it just depends on, you know, where they're at. And an assessment starts with an assessment, just like Eric said. I buy into that, you know, a huge amount. But it goes beyond, you know, just mobility stuff and going on that. And, you know, Eric's written a lot about it on his blog and totally agree. You can't address, you know, basic arm care stuff without just being totally, you know, strong and have, you know, great strength and great endurance. So a lot of it comes from just training the pitcher as an athlete first, which I think we've lost a lot in the last, you know, in the last decade, I think. Mm-hmm. And so starting from there, starting from the first principles is huge, developing the body overall, rather than just looking at the arm. So it starts from there. And then we kind of project what their load is or what their next, you know, year to 12 to 24 to 36 month outlook seems to be. And where they want to go from there. And it's about kind of managing that chronic and acute workload. Dr. Tim Gabbett's written a lot about it. And while I'm not sure it totally applies to baseball, the idea of just being able to on-ramp them slowly and, you know, have smooth periods of high workload without spiking their workload significantly, I think it's huge. And it's why long toss is such a huge thing that they can do in the off season and in season to make sure that their workload, you know, is properly peaked at the time that they need it to be. If that's spring ball for high school, you know, summer for collegiate summer, or fall ball for showcases with Jupiter. Just making sure that we can manage that workload properly over, you know, a period of months is to me like the most important thing they can do. And that starts with responsible planning at the beginning of the year.
And to the godfather of long toss, Alan, if you could, from your perspective, give us kind of talk us through arm health and development. Where do we start with this?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm going to echo exactly what those guys said. Sure. Individuality, obviously, is huge. Blending is huge. Athleticism is huge. So because those guys hammer those areas so well, I'm going to go a little bit more strictly to the idea of throwing and some of the principles that we, you know, live by. One, listening to your arm. Having different modalities obviously is great. That's where that whole blending thing is fantastic. You know, listening to players is so important, you know, finding out how to adapt to them and their strengths and their weaknesses per se. But again, at the end of the day, if a player doesn't really know what it means to listen to his arm, whether that's building the arm up in the off season, you know, whether they're on a 5-day cycle or a 7-day cycle in season, whether they're a relief pitcher, whether they threw 2 days ago or 4 days ago or threw 30 pitches last night, they have to be able to identify, you know, I guess where they're at, whether it's off season, in season, and also by knowing their arm really well. I love the word, you know, intimacy. You know, the more intimate you are with your arm, and of course that would mean your body, and of course your mind. Obviously, the better you have a chance to adapt yourself and have experience and draw from that experience. So I guess to really summarize, rule number one is you have to be in tune with your body, as the guy said. Two, you have to be so in tune with your arm, and you have to really understand some of the most basic principles of how to best build up your arm through throwing. And once you learn how to best optimize how to build up your arm, how to best maintenance it during the season, and I know we'll get into later stuff about the summer and rest and all that, but you know, those are the two main pieces for me is your foundation is your foundation. How do you build up your arm in the most optimal way? And how do you maintenance it the most optimal way? And what does it truly mean to listen to your arm and get to know your arm well?
And again, coaches, if you're listening to this, you can tell where this is going. And having these three terrific minds, these three guys on our call, we've got some great things to cover. So our plan is to kind of talk us through off season, move to in season. We're going to approach the summer, which again, for the prospects that are out there and both in high school and college, it's an incredibly challenging time, can be. And also as we look towards college commitments, the draft and advice. So we're going a lot of different ways, but again, we're going to start now that we've built a base, we're going to start from off season buildup as we look ahead to the season. So Kyle, at Driveline, in terms of your all's perspective, how you do things, how are you getting these guys prepared? What's your plan to keep them safe and healthy as they build up in the off season, looking ahead to really grinding through a season of baseball?
Yeah, so much of it, it just starts from where they're at. You know, it depends on the MLB organization they're playing for, the college they end up wanting to attend, or the high school they're at. So much of it that we want to do is we don't want to be known as the people that are imposing a training philosophy on a guy that's one size fits all is not only for the athlete, like a plan that you hand to somebody, but not taking into account the organization they play for or the high school or the college they're going to go to is also a huge factor. You know, you might have a school like Vanderbilt, which is very, you know, obviously an elite school, developing pitchers and you know, certainly a storied one. And they're very much in tune with what all three people on this podcast are talking about.
Sure.
And you might send the kid to, they may be going to another school that doesn't necessarily buy into long toss or that. So a lot of that starts with education, making sure the kid, if he's going to college or the pro that's in an MLB organization, knows, you know, what the limitations are going to be and what they're going to embrace. And then we work around that. We certainly don't want to prepare an athlete to put them in a situation that doesn't mimic what's going to happen in the off season. So that's why so much of the work that I've done in the last 2 years has been a lot of research with MLB teams, colleges, high schools, and we're fortunate enough to work with a ton of them to really get on the same page with them and make sure that we're preparing the athlete in the right way. And that could be, you know, a coach may not like long toss or may not like weighted balls, but that doesn't mean that the coach and I can't get along. You know, we can figure out a good way to address this person's needs so they'll fit in at that school or that organization they're going to be in. So to me, it starts there. And then, you know, we go to an assessment and really make sure that we're hitting all the target areas that they're going to the need, if it's mobility, stability, strength, speed, you know, arm speed, depends on their injury history. And then we start from there and kind of prescribe from an individual perspective, which is, you know, not that unique. A lot of people do that. But to me, it starts with making sure that we put them in the right situation and a place that they're going to succeed. And that starts with organizational research.
That's so good. I'm so glad you guys keep, every coach keeps referencing individual plans. It's outstanding. So Alan, same type question. Again, off-season buildup around your plan, how are you really working to help keep guys safe and healthy as they prepare for the season?
Well, I'll go back to something I just sort of said, which is essentially you're only as good as your base. And I think that applies to pretty much everything in life. You know, we look at the base as just the most crucial part of the year. I mean, the most crucial part of the developmental process. I mean, there's other pieces that are very important, but from at least from our experience, from a throwing perspective, how you build up is huge. And I'd say the main thing is to obviously know what's happened in the past, meaning where have you come from, and did you just finish a season, or did you just finish a rest period? But either way, we have sort of a 4 to 6 week, and again, everybody's arm is different. And I kind of use maybe a high school senior, college freshman as sort of the age reference. So, of course, if you're dealing with a 12-year-old or a, you know, a seasoned veteran professional player, it might be a little different. But from maybe 15 years of doing an 8-week camp with professionals before spring training, I got a really good pulse on, which is funny because it's sort of how I would have done it myself. But I got a really good pulse on really that 8-week cycle, if you will, or progression that was leading them into spring training. And in my opinion, I would have put up our guys against anybody in any organization as far as how they were built from a conditioning, endurance, and recovery period point of view, not to mention the normal things like just being athletic, explosive, you know, having great arm strength. So, again, I guess in a nutshell, I'd say just consider it from our experience, you're going to need 4 to 6 weeks, give or take, to optimally build up your arm. You know, we have a throwing manual that goes into gory detail, but in a nutshell, you know, we want our guys throwing often. It doesn't mean you have to throw a ton every day. It doesn't mean you have to go out to 300 feet every day. But for the most part, our off-season buildup, I have a saying, which is volume early, you know, volume over distance. So we're not really concerned about a lot of distance the first couple, 3 weeks. We just want guys building reps like a BP pitcher. We want them building endurance because great endurance leads to great recovery period. So sort of in a nutshell, we'll take a 4 to 6 week window. We'll spend probably the first 3 weeks really just working on volume and let the distance kind of accrue by itself. Once we find guys are starting to reach their peak distance, which again can create a new threshold 2 weeks from now or 2 months from now, we'll begin what we call our pull down phase where they're starting to get more aggressive. But again, if you allow for a 4 to 6 week window just to be conservative, I know Eric and Kyle would totally agree with this concept of just really being conservative in the early going. We're just so big into that, building it up the right way. And again, I'll just want to make sure I echo this. It's about endurance and reps and volume. And we're into, I'm sure like the other guys, we're into throwing more smartly, but throwing more, not less.
And Eric, if you got anything to add to that in terms of off-season buildup, especially from your perspective on sports performance.
Both those guys hit the nails on the head on a number of fronts. You know, if I could speak to it a little bit more generally, I would say it's education. My
there
biggest challenge is, you know, when we first started dealing with pro guys, and I mean, honestly, it's still a challenge to this day, is you want to be everywhere to help everyone. And unfortunately, I can't get to the California League from the East Coast, and I, you know, can't just hop on a flight and go to the Texas League every time, you know, someone needs to, you know, kind of have a resource at their fingertips that they can help, especially in an era where I think there are a lot of players who don't necessarily, you know, trust a lot of the resources they have in their teams, whether that's right or not. So I think, you know, what it made us realize and something we had to, you know, pull back on is, you know, how do we spend more time in the off season to really educate them, prepare them on, you know, why they respond better to one soft tissue modality than another, you know, why maintaining end range external rotation strength is so important for them, whereas other guys just seem to hold it better than they do. So I think we really try to work hard on educating about them about what's unique for them so that they can be proactive for themselves. You know, I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then, you know, taking it a step further, it's about checking in with people. You know, I think that's something that Alan has spoken to a lot about. You know, it's listen to your arm, but listen to everything, right? You know, it's funny. I was joking this morning on Twitter with Tyler Beatty. Like, Tyler had a 4 a.m. wake-up call to catch a 6 a.m. flight, and he started last night. Like, it's not exactly an ideal recovery scenario. You got the, you know, the airport, they had no food, and Starbucks was out of bagels with peanut butter and all this stuff. So it's, you know, minor league baseball isn't perfect. So what we need to do is we want to make sure we give guys the resources they need to be as successful as they possibly can in spite of the circumstances that are thrown at them. And you know what I think is the most powerful though, and I'm sure Kyle has seen this, I'm sure Alan has seen this as well, is when you have your guys that have been with you an extended period of time, who have modeled that lifestyle and used you as a resource, they kind of become assistant coaches for you. They become, you know, ambassadors who speak up about, hey, you know what, I'm not really sure that I want to do this in season, but this is something that I did. It might help you. You should talk to Eric about it or whatever it may be. So I think, you know, it's kind of like the small hinges swing big doors mentality. If you have one or two guys that, you know, have good results and they start speaking about it's working for them, other guys start to realize that if they become informed consumers, they learn about the process, they understand how to adapt it and individualize it to what they need.
And again, so now we're prepared, off-season buildup, and now we're walking right into our season. We all, from all of our perspectives, understand one of the toughest things for these athletes across any level to do is maintain that strength. But there certainly needs to be a plan in place on how they will go about that in season. So, Alan, if you could, start us off on that, on how you approach in-season maintenance with your guys and their education process of that.
Well, I think basically, I mean, you know, of course you have position players and pitchers are completely different animals. For position players, it's more of the same. It's just to not, and again, I think the cool thing about this conversation, and I love listening to these other guys talk, it's sure. Just awesome. You know, I think Kyle and Eric are going to talk about a lot of components where I'm going to talk about maybe more of the arm. Not that they won't talk about the arm too. So I think what I'll try to do is stay in my lane a little bit, and I'll still continue to talk more about the specifics of the just strictly the throwing, and let those guys, you know, tackle the areas that they're just so good at. And, you know, for me, it's the position players. I think the main takeaway is this. I think that during the season, it might be easy to fall into a trap that you're not as proactive with arm care stuff, whether it's, you know, band work, weighted balls, whatever it is that you need to do, you know, obviously Eric's stuff, it's, are you maintenancing it? And then the other thing is, are you proactive with throwing? Are you just going out there to play catch and get kind of loose each day? You know, or are you looking at this as a station to train each day? You know, I played third base. I eventually was a pitcher, but I played third base in high school. My arm was a tool. I mean, I had a, you know, for my size and age, or my size and height and all that, I had a pretty good arm, and I love throwing and I love long toss. And I had I think a strong arm for my size because of it. So I didn't think, it wasn't anything anybody had to tell me, like, keep your arm in shape or work on your arm each day. And I think that's one of the dangers of position players is they kind of show up, kind of get loose for their pregame infield or what have you. And I would take the opposite approach. How good do you want your arm to get throughout the season? You know, right. At least maintain what you've done in the offseason buildup. But why not get stronger as the season goes on? And I'll let the other guys speak more to that, other things they could do besides band work and continuing your long toss program. But for pitchers, to me, there's two animals with pitchers. One is starters, of course, and it's the same mentality. It's sort of like, okay, you've had a great offseason buildup. You've done all the training, all these different modalities. Now the season starts. And are you kind of shying away from throwing? Are you backing off too much? And from a throwing perspective, I think it's very dangerous. I think the key is maybe you're not going to get as much long toss in, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, but you can still get plenty of long toss in. You can still do more throwing than you think between starts. Our big thing is one of the best long toss days in season for a starter. And again, this doesn't necessarily apply to everybody, but most of the players we've trained in the last 27 years, you know, your start day is a great long toss day. You know, do you have to go out to 350? Well, if you probably ask Carson Fulmer, he'd probably say yes. But do you have to go out to, or Bauer, do you have to go out to 350? Maybe it's 330. I don't know. But you tend to stretch out close to your normal off-season distance. You tend to pull down close to your off-season, you know, mentality. Maybe some of that's less. But the idea is it mimics sort of what you've done in the off-season. Relief pitchers to me is maybe – for whatever reason, that's become a more sore subject, so maybe I'll spend just an extra minute on that.
Sure.
I go out there and I watch relief pitchers before the game, and unless they're at maybe Oregon State or Vanderbilt or TCU or, you know, some of these programs that, you know, I know that they just throw. they continue to throw, whether they're going to pitch 4 hours before, you know, whether it's 4 hours before the game or they're going to throw in one inning. And But I watch the majority, and this includes the professional world. It's probably most noticeable in the professional world. There's this mentality, of course, of saving your arm for the game. And, you know, I'm not pitching for 4 hours or whatever it is. And they go out to 90 feet or 120 feet. And I just, now, if you've done that the whole off season, I guess that's fine. That's normal. But if you're a 300-foot guy 4 or 5 days a week in the off season, it doesn't make any sense to me that you're not at least stretching your arm and kind of matching and connecting to what your arm is used to from the off season. You don't necessarily have to pull down before the game and create some intensity before the game, but at least get the arm stretched out and opened up. And so I guess those would be sort of the main areas I'd hit as far as in-season maintenance, just to be sure. In other words, maybe to summarize this, is that when the season starts, yes, there's certain areas that you may have to cut out and back off a bit, but not much. And I still think that, you know, long tossing and stretching your arm out and still maintaining your volume as much as you can is absolutely crucial. And I think for guys that sort of back off and really reduce their workload and really think about quote unquote saving their arm for the game, to me, they're asking for, in my opinion, they're asking for big problems. And it's almost like you're atrophying the arm and you're deconditioning the arm versus at least maintain the conditioning. And I believe strongly that you can get stronger throughout the season. And I think at the end of the day, if people really could get their head around that they could actually get stronger, at least maintain their endurance and continue to have great recovery period.
Right.
I hope this gives them at least a spark to look at how they approach their in-season mentality.
I'm glad you said that. And I'm sure all three of you guys would say the exact same thing. It's almost against what the normal mentality is that these guys are going to really decrease over time. That's just a normal progression of a season, when actually, if you go about it the right way with prescribed plan, there is an opportunity to get stronger. But again, that is on an individual basis. Eric, add to that, in season maintenance from your perspective, what would you add?
You know, I think there's a lot of factors that you have to consider. Like, it's, you know, I think initial training level is probably the single biggest one. Like, you know, I think it's very easy to, you know, I think say this from afar, like, you're going to get stronger in season. Like, you know, nobody feels good after they hit 180 innings. Like, walk into any major league clubhouse in the history of baseball, guys don't feel good once September rolls around. You know, especially if you're on a horrible team and you're, you know, ask any pro guy once the first week in October rolls around when their season ends, like, they're not really excited about playing catch. So I think the idea of guys getting better and better, you know, during the season is definitely noble. I think it's probably far more prevalent at younger levels when guys are less trained and they have a bigger window of adaptation ahead of them. It's probably much, much more prevalent in the college game where, you know, the whole season workload is probably lower. Guys are pitching on a 7-day rotation. The travel isn't as bad. The accommodations aren't bad. The food is better. There's a lot more things that they have working in their favor. I think, you know, when you're talking about professional baseball, we almost have to, like, put it into a very, very separate box.
Right.
There are definitely still scenarios where people can get better and better and better. But I think we do have to weigh out, like, you know, a 5-day rotation versus a 7-day rotation is a massive difference in terms of the amount of quality developmental work. 7-day rotations are actually pretty awesome developmentally, and I think that's why you see, you know, some organizations go into the 6-day rotation or the piggyback starts, things like that, where they can get more quality work in. But what I look at really, really heavy on the in-season side of things is, let's take a scenario of when someone actually is having struggles, right? You have to ask yourself, is why are they struggling? Are they struggling because they aren't fit, they showed up unprepared, and the demands of the season overtook them, whether that's, you know, in terms of being weak, whether it's in terms of not building enough initial work capacity, whether it's because maybe they didn't take care of the tissue quality, whatever it may be, or maybe a structural pathology. There's something that's wrong from a preparation standpoint. But the other spectrum, there are guys that come in great shape, but when something starts to go wrong, they think that it's automatically a lack of fitness, when in reality, it's probably a fatigue problem. You know, it's that guy that wants to work all the time. And in reality, what he probably needs to do is, instead of taking a fitness solution to a fatigue problem, he needs to figure out how to optimize recovery. And, you know, I think Kyle's done actually a good job of highlighting this in some of the presentations that he's talked about, is that, you know, we think about driveline, we think about weighted balls, we think about aggressive throwing programs, but really, you can't take those things on unless you understand the recovery side of the equation, you know, the focus on manual therapy, the focus on proper warm-ups, foam rolling, whatever it may be. Those are things that allow you to do that sexy stuff. So I think we need to be really, really cautious about just saying, hey, you know what, the second somebody's, you know, struggling in season, they just need more 350-foot long toss. They just need more weighted balls. They just need to lift heavier. Because historically that isn't the case in the guys that probably Kyle and Alan and I maybe work with the most, the people who are bought in, who love to train, who love to get at it after it. The fact that we're in the private sector throws a little bit of like a velvet rope around our businesses where it weeds out people who don't really like to work hard and try to get better. There's a whole other block of people in baseball who probably need to be really honest with themselves that, hey, maybe it wasn't a great idea to start playing catch January 15th and only play catch out to 120 feet and get one bullpen under your belt before you showed up for spring training. That's right. The reason why your biceps tendon is killing you the third week in March. And those are the hardest guys to figure out because they've fundamentally put themselves behind the eight ball. You need to add fitness, but at the same time, there's acute fatigue that you need to manage. So I think those are all really valid considerations. We have to, you know, it goes back to the individualization discussion. I think the other thing too is just, you know, it probably doesn't get the love that it deserves is monitoring body weight goes a really, really long way. It's honestly, it's shocking how much some guys waste away. We have a kid who actually just got up here, and who's playing at a Division II school here on the East Coast who's came up for the week just to get evaluated and get himself right before he starts summer ball. One of the things that was interesting is he showed up at college at 205. He walked in here at 185 8 months later. Wow. In a program that doesn't allow long toss past 120, and they don't allow sprinting. Everybody just does distance running, and the coach is very old school, isn't really big on lifting weights. So when you remove, you know, strength training, you remove sprinting, you remove, you know, more aggressive throwing approaches, and you wonder why this kid showed up at 86, 88, and now he's 80 to 82. So sometimes the dysfunction from a programming and a coaching standpoint is so massive that you almost have to start to think about how you're going to prioritize. It's like triage for the baseball athlete. So, you know, body weight tends to be something that I look at really, really quickly, and then you have to dig a lot deeper. And a guy like that, you know, sure thing, he's down 20 pounds. There's your very, very obvious answer before you touch anything else.
Sure. Great segue there for Kyle. Kyle, add your piece on in-season maintenance and how to keep these guys, again, hopefully maintaining what they've built up, but maybe even getting stronger.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, Alan and Eric really covered a lot of it for me. Sure. They had my piece in it. It's about managing what, for the person, are they going to be someone that can tolerate a lot of in-season throwing, or a guy that is maybe someone that can't, is a high twitch, fast twitch guy that can't tolerate a lot of throwing. And that's something that we're kind of doing a ton of research on, Driveline with the sports science equipment that we have. Some people are just able to show up on October, whatever, November, whatever. It depends on, you know, when they want to start their throwing program. And they're just, you know, throwing absolute gas, you know, right away. Like, they just have that ability to turn it on real quick. Mm-hmm. And for them, they're a high signal guy, and they're a big injury risk. So for them, we need to make sure we limit their throwing program in season, going into the season, first of all, but then in the season, that maybe between their starts, that they're gonna throw a lot less. Guy like that is Matt Boyd for the Tigers. Has incredible arm speed. You know, his velocity is fine. You know, he's been basically a 91, 94 guy. Out of the pen, he's been up to 97. But he's a guy, he's a starter, and he's durable, but he's got such amazing arm speed that it's just on tap right away. And so Matt's had elbow surgery in the past to clean out bone chips in there. Nothing serious, but for that guy, we just need to manage his workload significantly so he can throw 180-plus innings a year. And that's such a huge factor for him. For a guy that can tolerate a ton of volume is a guy like Trevor Bauer, who is, you know, frankly, not that great of an athlete. All of his tests are not the best. The vertical leap, you know, 60-yard dash, anything that you'd associate with a general athlete is low to average. And so for him, if he doesn't do a lot of volume, then he's not going to be able to express the arm strength that he needs in a game. You know, his injury history is pretty clean. He's had hip issues in the past. But nothing to the arm. So for him, he needs to throw a lot to be able to express his top end velocity and to stay healthy. You know, he can throw 130 pitches in a game, no problem.
Sure.
But to do that, he's going to have to keep up a ton of stress in between starts, and that's the big thing for him. And so for us, it's about kind of not individualizing. I mean, that's definitely part of it, but it's about figuring out where they're at. It applies to the weight room too. There's a lot of guys that can just touch weight and don't lose a lot of strength in season. and are super explosive right away. You know, their sprint times are, you know, on point right away. And there's a lot of guys who take that 6 weeks off and lose a lot of ability. And so it's about just figuring out where they're at there. The big leagues are littered with tons of high signal guys, tons of guys that threw 100, tons of guys that threw 90 when they were 16, guys that were just like super, super good athletes. And the way that you manage them is totally different than the way that you would manage a guy that was a late bloomer, that wasn't a good athlete, that, you know, had a lot of chronic stress to be able to be good. And that's kind of where we fall on it. And, that's mostly at the pro ranks. I think that's really important, but at the college ranks, it's extremely important too, as kids go from 18, 19 years old into legitimate professional prospects, top 100 draft guys, and they're going to start on Friday for you. You know, your plan better change your junior year than what it was as a freshman. And, I think some of the best colleges in the top 25, you see them, they're really good at that. And, that's a big piece that I think, organizations, as people on this phone call, and college and pro ball are really going to start having to pay attention to as velocities increase and the game becomes more and more, you know, just speeds up. And that's kind of where it starts for us for in-season maintenance.
That's awesome. And again, you got to keep this in mind, coaches that are listening. We're recording this mid-May. We're going to release this mid to late May. And we've got so many guys, like these guys have mentioned, that are coming in now post-college season. As high school's wrapping up and we're post-high school season and we're approaching summer baseball, travel baseball, showcase, camps, recruiting, the summer. And it can be an absolute unsure and scary time for players and parents, coaches per se, of the workload that's been placed on these players from January to this point. So, Eric, I want you to kind of kick this off. Navigating the summer, kind of hold Alan's term there. How do you go, from your perspective, how would a family or a player go through navigating the summer and keeping himself healthy and prepared?
You know, I think it speaks to a little bit of what Kyle talked about earlier is, you know, how do you plan out your yearly calendar? Mm-hmm. You know, who are you in the sense that I always talk about, like, in-season training. It's like managing a bank account, right? Every time you get in a training session in the off-season, whether it's lifting, manual therapy, throwing, whatever it is you're doing to build up an initial level of fitness to prepare you for the sport that you're participating in, like, you're making a deposit at the bank. And every time you go on that 7-day road trip to Georgia where you know you're going to be having Golden Corral for breakfast and staying in a hotel room where the dumbbells are only up to 20 pounds. And, yeah. You know, those are withdrawals. So, A, the number one, you know, way to prepare for in-season training is to have a good off-season. Like the classic, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So I think that is absolutely step one, is understand whether you are someone who has a good fitness level. If you're a high school kid and you need to go a week without training in the summer because you put in quality work the rest of the year, I can live with that 100%. And so what we'll do with those guys, too, is knowing that, you know, particularly in the high school ranks when there's travel ball and stuff, they're gearing up for maybe 4 to 5 big events over the course of a year.
Right.
What we do is we just kind of front load their training. So we get in a ton of work when they're around, knowing that there's going to be times when they taper off when they're gone. And if those trips are a little bit longer, then those are scenarios where they need to go out of their way to get some in-season training while they're on the road. And, you know, most of the guys that we're with, you know, play for my business partner, Brian, you know, coaches for FTB, and they're always really, really good about making sure guys get, like, you know, gym visits while they're on the road. I know New England Roughnecks, who we work with up in our Massachusetts facility, they're great about getting guys into the gym when they're on the road. So, you know, those are like add-ons to programs that, you know, I think a lot of people maybe lose sight of that are super important. I think, you know, looking at the college and the pro side are definitely, you know, a little bit more challenging. Usually those guys have a higher level of fitness for the most part in college. Obviously, you have strength and conditioning coaches that oversee it. I think probably the biggest challenge that we see in the college realm is not so much in the guys who are playing every day. It's in the other guys that are, you know, kind of like the middle of the roster to the bottom half in terms of actual involvement. You know, the guy that maybe gets 8 innings as a freshman, like, he needs to treat that season developmentally. But at the same time, if he's always wondering if he's going to throw an inning in relief on a midweek game or if he's going to make a spot start if somebody gets hurt or something like that, those are hard. So they always wind up just sitting around and waiting and waiting and waiting for the right time. And my experience has been there's never going to be a right time for in-season training. You're always going to have to basically realize that you're going to sacrifice some stuff. So what I tell guys is make sure your in-season lifting is efficient, right? Get in and out in 40 minutes, focus on the high-priority exercises, and just appreciate, hey, position players have been lifting on game days, you know, for decades now. So sometimes you might lift in the morning and go out and throw an inning out of the pen that night, and I've known a lot of guys over the years who honestly feel better on days that they train. They feel like it wakes them up, it gets them a little bit primed to go out and put some good quality work in. So,
sure.
Professional ranks are obviously really, really challenging. We do specific stuff for all of our guys across the board. You know, I do different things for different starting pitchers depending on, you know, what they prefer. We still have guys who like to lift after a game, believe it or not. That's kind of like a thing that's gone by the wayside in professional baseball, but some guys who take a big toll on their body like to kind of consolidate that stress so they get an extra day off.
Mm.
You know, on the reliever side of things, we have kind of like short options and long options depending on what their workload was in games and how they want to, you know, space things out. But I'd say if you average it out, I'd say most of our pro guys are still lifting 2 to 3 days a week. And I've had guys over the years who have liked to do it as much as four and even get like some extra sprint work programmed for them. So it's really an individual answer for everybody.
Sure. Absolutely. As it is across the board on all this. Kyle, same question again, navigating the summer from your perspective, kind of what are some concerns you might have, but also what would be advice that you would give some of the guys that you train in terms of how they go about these months ahead?
You know, a lot of it is, again, just kind of goes to what organization they're in. And, you know, Eric said there's not, that might be the best way to say it, is there's no good time to for in-season training.
Sure.
A lot of it is, you know, the barn is already open, essentially. You know, like if your off-season was poor, then we're behind the eight ball. And so it's about, you know, doing mitigating the damage as best you can. And if they put in a ton of good work in the off-season, then a lot of it is just trusting where they're at, you know, and that's such a big factor for a lot of our guys, maybe who have had a bad start to the pro season or finishing up college and not the way they wanted to. And then maybe going to the Cape, where they're going to play in a summer league and they just want to, you know, get their feet under them. A lot of it is just saying, hey, you know, you put in four months of hard work in the off season and in season, you've kept your nutrition up and the results maybe aren't what you want them to, but, now's not the time to go get that extra gear. You know, you have to trust, you know, that what you've done is right. And then we're going to have to make the adjustments as best we can. But a lot of people try to do too much rather than too little. I would say that's easily the biggest issue. Most people are trying to do a lot of too much stuff in the weight room, too much stuff, lawn toss, too much stuff, weighted balls, throwing too many bullpens. They lose the feel of their sliders. So they throw, you know, 150 sliders over like 3 days. Just they're always trying to play catch up and not just trusting that it's a long process and there's always going to be bumps in the road. So for me, the biggest issue or the biggest message I have to a lot of our players is just maintain the course, really trust that what you did in the off season is enough. And don't try to find it in, you know, in May. Don't try to find it in June because it's a long process. It's a long road ahead. And you don't want to do something silly that would expose you to injury that leads you to have another bad off season. And then it's this bad cycle. Mm-hmm. So it's just about trusting the work that you did in the off season. That's our biggest message to the guys today.
Sure. And this is such an awesome topic, Alan, that you bring up in your revamped year-round throwing manual. When you talk about that added addition of navigating the summer to your program, if you could, from your perspective, what are some of the concerns you might have, but how would a player out there or a family look at these months knowing that there's some things that hinge on how they perform? How would they go about navigating that?
Well, I think you know this is a very important topic to me. I had to learn from a player I was consulting for more or less a calendar year from his junior year to his senior year for the draft. And I'd already written an off-season throwing program in collegiate baseball and an in-season throwing program, I believe, in collegiate baseball. But little did I know is there's this new animal in the summer. And sure, I'm aware of all the things that go on in the summer between, you know, showcases and travel teams and all, you know, all these different events that are going on. But until I was really with him, consulting him and going through the summer into the fall, it just blew my mind. It really, what I call a lot of stopping and starting. Mm-hmm. So I think what I'm going to do is really tackle our greatest concern, which is really the high school player. I think the college guys, you know, whether they pitched a lot of innings in the spring and then they're kind of in shutdown mode in the summer or didn't pitch much in the spring, so now they're going to get a lot of innings in, you know, a summer league like the Cape. They tend to obviously run themselves. The pro world, I'm not really going to touch much either because I think we've already talked a lot about in-season maintenance. And mm-hmm. To me, the high school player is 1,000,000,000% the biggest concern. Not that there's not concern for the other players. I just mean there. I think there's just there's more danger, if you will. There's more vulnerability. And so we have a few rules of thumb that I've tried to really tackle in that piece in the manual about the navigating the summer, which is number one, if you're a high school player and you've gone through your spring and you're actually feeling pretty strong, I want them to just keep the ball rolling, keep the momentum going. When they're ready for a rest, they're ready for a rest. But I think the main pieces I hope the takeaways that people get, coaches get from this, I guess this angle, is that you have to be super aware of what I call stopping and starting. If you finish your high school season and it's June and you want to keep playing for another month or 6 weeks and you're rolling and you can tell by your arm strength or your endurance or of course your recovery period that everything is, you know, all the boxes are checked and you feel great. And again, if you listen to your arm and know your body, this is pretty straightforward for athletes that are, you know, getting to that age. And, so at the end of the day, if you do feel like you're ready for a break, fine, take a break. But if you've got, you know, like Eric, I think, mentioned earlier about a calendar is huge for us, because if your season ended June 1st and you want to do a showcase June 19th and July 7th and August 12th, and, you know, it's spread out all over the map, and then you've got a summer ball team you're playing for, and then there's a showcase, you know, in front of, you know, college recruiters or scouts. Again, there's so many options and variables in the summer that can be so confusing. So, couple rules of thumb to keep this very simple. Rule number one, if you're feeling good when your season ends in the spring and you have dates coming up, whether it's summer ball, pitching on the weekend, scout ball, and you feel good, keep rolling. If my rule of thumb is this, if you take 1 week off, you need 2 weeks, meaning you need 1 week to match that week of just normal conditioning. And then the second week you need for more conditioning and maybe to throw a pen or two. And that's only to reset you up for, let's say, an inning. You take 2 weeks off at any point, you need 3 weeks. 2 weeks to match the 2 weeks you took off, another week for a pen or two to throw an inning. 3 weeks is 4 weeks. 4 weeks is five. Basically, when you get to a four-week window where you've rested for 4 weeks, you're sort of back to scratch, and you're back to your 4 to 6 week buildup. Mm-hmm. And the main reason I came up with this model or formula, if you will, is because it's almost impossible to screw this up. Meaning, right. If you do want to take a rest at X point and another rest at the, it's all set up to where you can't get too far away from your base. Again, if you remember earlier, I said that you're basically as good as your base. And so I'm all about staying in touch with your base. If you get away from your base, you have to recondition your base, so that when you do go back to aggressive throwing and getting on a mound, your base is in place, your conditioning is in place, your endurance is in place, and you're set up for a great recovery period. I think if you follow this very simple rule of thumb from a training perspective, it's hard to put yourself in a position where you're having these stops and starts that have no rhythm to them. Because as we know, kids in the summer, between going on vacation, going to the beach, going wherever, taking some time off, it's not maybe on the front burner that they're going to be in a hardcore 5-day cycle of training, you know, out of 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like this is where kids are, you know, going back to this idea of this question, to me, the most vulnerable players for sure at the high school level with this whole summertime deal going on, really kind of now blending into the fall. So it was a long answer, but in a nutshell, I would just say really look for the dangers of stopping and starting, making sure you have a plan in place that if you do take, hey, resting is fine. And look, if you want to take 6 weeks off or 8 weeks, whatever you take off, fine. Because then you're going to just start your rebuild cycle again, which for us is at least 4 to 6 weeks. But the idea is that you're never in a position throughout the summer whereas there is this sense of when do I stop, when do I start, how much do I throw. You don't want to put yourself in a position where you're guessing. You want to know that you always have your base in place, you're always working from strength, you're always setting yourself up for a good recovery period. And if you want to take a rest, take a rest. But just know you always have to be connected to your base.
Now, here is a critical point in this show, because I'm getting ready to open up a Pandora's box of opinions and ideas that have really changed the way that I have viewed things. And again, our conversations with these two guys, with Eric and Kyle, but also some talks with Alan, that's really, from a former coach's perspective, viewing things completely differently, now jumping on the other side of the fence. And what we're going to talk about is we're looking at college commitments. We're looking at the upcoming Major League Draft. And again, as we've talked through these training programs, someone that spent an inordinate amount of time being prepared from a strength and conditioning standpoint, or someone that's really bought in and understands and has grown and developed under a weighted ball training program, or someone that really prescribes to long toss and the mental side of things. Now that person's looking probably more particularly into the high school player or the college player that's looking ahead for the commitment or looking to head to the draft. And Kyle, I want you to kick this one off. For that person that's going to really walk into maybe an unsure territory, what are some of the things they need to be aware of from a college program perspective or a major league organizational perspective?
Yeah, wow. It's definitely some fireworks to fly. So I'll try to save some stuff for Alan and Eric because I know they're super passionate about this issue. For those who don't know, Alan, Eric, and I constantly talk about this topic informally and formally. It's about that time of the year where we're always in contact with each other anyway about this topic. The big thing for me is just having some education and reaching out. It really is frustrating. I'll speak on the college side first. For these kids to take visits, official visits, unofficial visits to schools and be wooed by gear and football and the campus. And those are all important things. I mean, college is definitely valuable. Going to school and enjoying where you go to school is definitely important. But if you're a high profile athlete and you're going to forego the draft and you're going to go to school, then part of that calculus is a return on investment and understanding the coach that you're going to, the program that you're going to. You don't have to be an uncoachable kid and say, well, if they don't let me do 100% of what I do, then I'm not going there. You know, that's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is if you have conviction about what the things that made you good, then you need to do some research. A particular kid, I won't say who it is, and I won't say the program that he went to, but was consulting with me. He was the top 100 draft guy, a perfect game 10, all those kind of things. And he was choosing between a couple of different top 25 schools. And he went for a big glitzy program. And I said, hey, that's fine. I understand that. But you have to understand that these are the issues that you may run into. They have a long history of not allowing this or this. And if you're okay with that, making that trade-off, that's fine. He's a sophomore now. He hasn't seen the field once. You know, he's pitching in inner squads, and he's 90, 93, 94, getting guys out. But it's just an issue with the coaching staff and with him. It's a tough situation. I feel bad for the kid, but at the end of the day, those kids got to do their own research. And that's where an advisor and a parent really comes into, really comes in handy and is important. In today's internet age, there's no excuse for not doing your research on what's out there. There's Twitter, there's social media, there's Alan, there's me, and there's Eric. There's people that have been in the game long enough, certainly longer than me, that know a lot of the dirty laundry that's out there. On the pro side, that's the job of the agents and the advisors. There's a lot of advisors out here who are excellent. Eric and Alan and I know some great ones, and they really prioritize that. They really prioritize the development of where they're going to go. Pro Bowl is more varied than college. It's kind of divided into thirds, in my opinion. The top 10 are kind of okay with aggressive throwing programs or embrace their own and are cool with guys pushing weight and are really into mobility and manual therapy and pay attention to keeping guys healthy. The middle 10 are kind of in the middle, depends on where they're at. It's they're good on some areas and bad on some areas. And then the bottom 10 are brutal, really restrictive throwing programs, very dictatorial. And it will not surprise the listeners to know that those are very reflective in the rankings and in the standings currently in the MLB. The most flexible and the forward-thinking organizations tend to have the least disabled list days and tend to be at the top of the rankings, honestly, top of the standings right now. And so that's being able to do your research there is huge. Kids should be able to, kids should reach out. It's their duty, no doubt about that. But it's coaches' jobs, it's agents' jobs, and it's high school coaches' jobs. It's our job to be educated on these topics and get it into the kids' hands. Kids 15, 16 years old, kids are committing earlier than ever. It may be kind of too much to expect them to know every the lay of the land. And it's our job, it's the adult's job to be an adult, to stand up and to say, these are things that are important. And, make a decision however you want. It's your life. But understand that these are the pros and cons of what's going on. And, I'll let Alan and Erica kind of add on to that.
Sure. Alan, just jump right on top of that, man. We know the question. We know where we're going with this college commitments and MLB draft from your perspective, man. Open it up.
Well, I mean, Kyle just crushed it hard and, he nailed it. And I'd add to it this, college and in recruiting, you have essentially total control as a player, as a family. One thing I always tell kids that are going down the recruiting trail is the most important thing other than, of course, your education, but your baseball life, the most important thing is that are you going to be in a position to thrive and do the things that make you tick and got you there? Because you're in charge. You're in charge of that choice. And no one wants to get shocked and get to a campus and all of a sudden be told that, hey, you can't do, 90% of what you want to do or 20% of what you want to do. So number one, kind of going back to what Kyle said, education. You know, ask questions. You know, one of the most important questions you should ask the head coach or the pitching coach if you're a pitcher is, I love long tossing. I love doing weighted balls. I'm a huge follower of Eric Cressy's stuff. It's like these are the things that you have to get out up front and not only get the information back from the coach and the assurance back from the coach, but get it in front of your parents. Mm-hmm. So number one, I think the college process, and I think this bodes well for recruiters. If you're a recruiter and you're in touch with Eric and Kyle and our stuff and Lance Wheeler and Ron Wolforth, and you just go around the country, you know, things that, you know, you feel like are modalities that have been helpful for you, and you're a recruiter and you say, hey, we do that, or we're aware of it, or we welcome it. You know, we allow it back to this word we've all talked about. We allow for individuality. We are good at adapting. So, you know, you for a college recruiter, this becomes now a benefit to be in tune with the kid and the openness, if you will, to the kid. So the college side of it, I think that's what I'd say. On the pro side, you don't have as much control, obviously. Any team can draft you anywhere, no matter what you tell them. That's just life. It's reality. But nowadays with the pool money, you can influence a draft more than ever. And as Kyle mentioned, you know, whether we call it officially an agent or an advisor on the phone call, the bottom line is that it is, in my opinion, and again, I'm going to talk for pitching and I'm going to talk for throwing. And I know there's plenty of other modalities, but just starting there, his number one job, and I've told this to a few players recently and other people I've talked to about this. His number one job or her number one job as your advisor is this simple. Get you aligned with the right organization on draft day. That's the only – because, look, arbitration is 10 years down the road or 8 years down the road or whatever. Getting whatever happens after draft day, once a team drafts you and you sign with them, I forget what the number is based on the 40-man roster and whatever, but they can technically, I think, own you for about 9 years. And that number may have changed, but don't quote me exactly on it. But they can technically keep you in an organization for a really, really long time. So all of a sudden – if you look at it from that perspective, your draft day is it.
Huge.
Getting to the right team is the most important thing that your advisor, other than the obvious things of trust and loyalty and all those good things and an agent does. And if I was a player and I was a parent and I was picking an agent, so to speak, I would tell them up front, look, I'm telling you right now, like a lot of things are going to happen after the draft, of course, but I'm telling you right now, the most important thing you're going to do for my son is you're going to get them aligned with the right team, and you're going to make sure that the teams that are highly restrictive, highly regressive, not adaptable, imposing their program on you, those teams, in the most diplomatic, nice way, but those teams have to be avoided. And so in a nutshell, I would just say, A, of course, awareness is, you know, the priority, education, asking questions. And if you are drafted by a team that you maybe haven't done as much homework on or you haven't got as much information out, but then you do find out things prior to signing and you have an option to go to a college program where you've already consulted with them and they've already said to you, look, we're going to allow you to continue to do what you've done and encourage it and support it and adapt to you. Well, to me, all of a sudden, it changes the game. It puts you in a totally different mindset as to whether or not you're going to go to college for 3 years or 4 years again and go back in the draft or sign. So I'll wrap it up with this. This is a very meaningful topic to me, of course. You know, all of us have trained players, whether they get drafted or not. We all train players that are in a position that wherever they go to the next step, whether it's NAIA, Division III, Division II, Division I, or professional baseball, what we care about at the end of the day is putting our athletes in a position where they can optimize their ability, optimize their dreams, optimize their path. That's what we care about. Wherever it goes, it goes. And at the end of the day, that's why it is so important. This topic, by the way, is so important. I'm glad it's come up, and I'm glad we're talking about it, because the parents and the players and even the coaches in school that have a player drafted that has a choice of either staying as a senior or going into the draft and signing, this all becomes critically important information to know and be aware of and just making, you know, life-changing decisions going forward. So hopefully that didn't go on too long, but that's it in a nutshell. Eric?
Sure. Is there any meat on the bone for you, Chris?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
so
jump
this,
in.
This is my baby. Like, I'm massively passionate about this just because, and we have kids who have trained with us in eighth grade who are in the big leagues now. Like, the athletic, like, lifespan is what, like, keeps me awake at 3 a.m. staring off into blackness. Like, this is what I do all day, every day. I think, you know, like, speaking honestly, like, we can probably, like, look to, like, the largest sample size in the country of, like, here is what a complete athletic development experience over the course of time. And we're talking about a massively impactful decision of whether to go to college or whether to go to pro ball. And here's the challenge that we all need to keep in mind, is that no matter how mature that 17 or 18 year old kid you have is, his brain is still not fully developed, right? Mm-hmm. Steve Cishek grew 7 inches his first year in college. He's a big leaguer now. Like, the fact that someone could undergo that dramatic of physical change, just imagine what a neurological change could also happen in that first year. I remember seeing, like, Tyler Beatty and Adam Ravenel come back from their first semester at Vanderbilt, and they were completely different people. The way that they had matured, the way that Rav's delivery had changed, there were just, I mean, these massively, massively impactful changes that took place. So, you know, that isn't necessarily like I'm vouching for pro ball, I'm vouching for college setup. All I'm saying is that we have kids who are in a very, very impressionable time in their life who, from a pure physiological, neurological standpoint, are not qualified to make that decision by themselves. And I think that both Kyle and Alan both alluded to that just now, is just that, you know, you need to have the right people in the right places, whether that's advisors, whether that's parents, whether it's teammates, coaches, all those things. And the challenge becomes a lot of times that the other people that are in the mix that are assisting in that decision, they don't know how to ask the right questions either, right? They look purely at the academic side of things of, wow, this could be an incredible degree, but oh, wow, this coach has had 5 Tommy Johns in the last year. Like, that's the challenge about this. Like, mm-hmm. We got an email, or actually have a text I'm going to read to you, from a kid at a fringe Division I school, not a really high-end Division I school, that's high academic. And he said, we started in the fall with 16 pitchers. We've lost 3 to Tommy John, 1 with a bad shoulder, and 1 of our outfielders is getting Tommy John in a couple days. We've had 5 kids with Tommy John in the 3 years our coaches have been here, and 8 on our roster have had it. That should not happen. At any level. Like, those numbers are astronomical compared to norms across the country. And it's a one-size-fits-all throwing program that's crazy aggressive, and they're not pre-qualifying which kids are right for it, which ones aren't. Like, you just can't throw a bunch of crap on the wall and see what sticks, and that's what happened in that program. But to have that happen at a massively high academic school that everybody would love their kid to graduate from, that's a big problem. That's a hard thing to reconcile for a mom and dad who want their kid to get a great education, but at the same time, they don't anticipate having to have 2 surgeries in 4 years and to miss out on, you know, potentially an opportunity to play professional baseball. So what it speaks to is something that Alan and I actually talked on the phone with last week, is it's never going to be a perfect situation, right? I have organizations where maybe I disagree wholeheartedly on how they approach throwing programs, but I love their rehab side of things. I have organizations where maybe I disagree with the strength and conditioning side of things, and then they probably have a, you know, an awesome minor league pitching coordinator, or maybe they're super forward thinking in terms of how they scout and how they do game prep, and I love their front office. You're never going to have an ideal scenario, right? I've been married to my wife since 2010. I love her to death, but there are things that my wife does that drive me bonkers. But, you know, I know how to look past those things because I love her. So at the end of the day, you need to be able to figure out which is which. What are the things you can live with and what are the things that you can't live with? You know, shameless self-promotion. I wrote an article back in 2012. It's called 25 Questions to Ask During the College Baseball Recruiting Process. Like, this is a collection of stuff that people don't think about. Most people think about, are the grass green? Does it have my major? Are the girls pretty? And how much scholarship money am I getting? Oh, and, you know, who is the cool alum that I got to meet on my visit? What you have to ask yourself is, you know, how tenured is that team's athletic trainer? Is it a grad assistantship that gets rolled in each year with someone who's never put their hands on a baseball player? Or is it someone that's, you know, Chris Hamm at Vanderbilt, who's been there an extended period of time, who's absolutely outstanding, right? Like, you know, what does the coach do with respect to summer programs, right? Is he sending you to the middle of nowhere where you won't have access to a gym, you won't have any kind of coaching? Or is he a guy that's got a track record of placing guys in great developmental opportunities? You have to be willing to ask all those questions, but at the same time, you have to be a realist and you have to recognize that it's never going to be a perfect dynamic. But to speak to, like, the college versus pro decision, I don't think it's as simple as just a education versus money dynamic. I think it's, you know, certainly an opportunity question, but I think it's also a question of the kid. There are some kids who are incredibly prepared for professional baseball, and there are some kids that I think are massively unprepared. So what you really have to do is you have to take the kid in mind. Adam Ravenel, speaking about him, like, Adam, you know, without hesitation, I never would have said this back in, you know, 2011 when he was drafted out of high school by the Yankees, but I think Adam needed college probably as much as any kid I've ever met. And he went to Vanderbilt, you know, and basically became their closer and won a national championship and, you know, left as a fourth rounder by the Tigers. And that was a tremendous decision for him. But by that same token, there are other kids who I think can sign and do incredibly well, particularly in the right organization. So I try to really attack it on an individual basis. I'm sure the other guys on this call do as well. But I do think it's just really important to be a realist about it and not just say, hey, this organization stinks and this one's awesome, because nobody's perfect, right? There are things that are good in some and are bad in the other. So you really have to weigh which ones are the most important to you. And I think that's where we kind of fit in, you know, a lot of times, and kind of being that unbiased party. Like, at the end of the day, it doesn't change. I mean, I went to bed on draft night with August 15th or whatever it was, with Tyler Beattie turning down $2.5 million from the Blue Jays in 2011 to go to Vanderbilt. Like, I don't anticipate seeing any nights that could be more nerve-wracking than that. But, you know, it worked out great for him, and it was a great developmental opportunity. So no decisions or, like, you know, I guess scenarios scare me, you know, at this point in time. I just try to be honest with people.
I'm so glad all of you were. That was an awesome journey that we kind of took, especially as listeners, for stuff that maybe coaches don't spend a lot of time thinking about outside of just coaching. And again, seeing that other side, I'm really very thankful that you guys offered that on our show. So here's kind of our parting and final thoughts. And Alan, I want you to kick this off. Just what else haven't we covered or that you want to throw out there, but also advice for the guys that listen to this going, I need to get better at understanding arm health and development. What would you offer that coach listening in?
Well, first of all, I don't know how much I can add. That was missed. I mean, one thing I love about being on conversations like that is I get better. You know, I just listening to Kyle and Eric talk, and, you know, your questions and input, it's inspiring, to tell you the truth. So I don't know what I'd really add other than, you know, I think the main thing is be open-minded, be resourceful. I'm sure Eric and Kyle tell you the same thing. We put out so much information that's free. We're ultimately teachers, and you can almost say caregivers. You know, we really care about making a difference. And so take advantage of it, whether it's YouTube, whether it's our websites, you know, and I think we'd all tell everybody the same thing. You know, don't necessarily take anything blindly because we say so or someone else says so. Do your homework. You know, talk to other people, get educated about what other people have done or experienced. But at the end of the day, there is so much information out there, and be resourceful and do your homework, because look, this is your, you know, one chance at it, whether you're a player or you're a parent or you're a coach. So give yourself the best opportunity to educate yourself and be open-minded and go to school and stuff. And maybe like a little bit of this and a lot of that and not so much of that, but I think the best coaches I've met, you know, I'm up here in Corvallis and I'm spending a lot of time around Nate Yeske, and, you know, something he said yesterday, probably at dinner or the day before, was along the lines of, you know, I think one of his strengths is that he takes a lot of information or maybe samples of information from a lot of different areas, and he just kind of molds it into his deal. But I think we're all learning. We're all always learning. Sometimes you have to unlearn too, but sure. You know, at the end of the day, just tap into these resources. One of the things, as you know, Jeremy, we've talked a lot about this, I love about the calls from the clubhouse and the ABC in general, what this format you've created is, it's about education and, sure, and making education available to the community, whether it's a coach, player, or parent. So I think I would just end on that point is be resourceful, be open-minded. For coaches out there especially, please ask questions of your players, learn from them, find out what they're doing, educate yourself. I think communication at the end of the day is just so important. And as we all will say over and over again, everybody is so different. I think the best thing we can all do is just really learn to listen, ask questions, and adapt, you know, find out what your strengths are. But again, just keep learning and keep I guess keep doing your best to, you know, to grow, evolve, and hopefully this call alone is just another great resource for people.
Eric, anything to add to that? Advice you would offer?
You know, I think the funny thing about this and is if you listen to a call like this, you know, and honestly, it's probably even a higher percentage, but we agree on the 90%. Like, and that's true of the strength and conditioning field. That's true of the, you know, the baseball world across the board, is that everyone agrees on 90% and we love to fight over the other 10%, right? And that's a really, really interesting thing in this day of social media, right? People love to argue on the internet. But in reality, what you need to look at is, you know, if everybody's agreeing on the 90%, really smart people are all agreeing on the 90%, and they're basically applying that high percentage in their practice on a daily basis and getting results. What does it tell you when someone does something outside of that 90%, right? When you go across all the best facilities in the country, regardless, you know, of where you are, and they're all having their baseball players run fast, jump high, train to be explosive, and then there's a pitching coach out there that's just telling you to log miles and miles and miles of distance running, right? Like, we know that falls outside the scope of what is probably best for baseball players. That's a glaring, overlook of what's happening in that 90% we all agree on. So as a kind of an informed consumer, what I tell you is look for the things that everybody agrees on, right? I think everybody agrees for the most part that long toss is helpful, right? That there's a place for weighted balls. What they disagree on is the dosage, the timing, you know, who's the right fit for them and all that sort of thing. So you learn to critically evaluate once you can figure out what the discussion points are, what is in that 90%. So that's what I would tell guys the most is kind of observe the commonalities of successful people in the industry and see where it takes you.
That's great. Kyle, add to that, put the exclamation point on this call.
As the most junior member of the call,
I'll
kind of fall in line, honestly, what Eric and Alan said. No, I think Eric, I mean, you can't say it better than that. Guys, you know, Eric and I have, I looked up to him a lot. You know, we came up together in a sense. He's years ahead of me. But at the same time, you know, we were doing so much different stuff when we were doing starting up, but then we've all converged on the 90%, you know, it's tremendous. I can't speak more highly enough of what Eric said, basically, because if Alan and Eric and I and people that are training, you know, between the three of us, we probably train, you know, I don't know if it's a majority of my professional baseball players, but it's potentially fairly close. And so if we're all working with the guys and, you know, our guys are playing on Sunday and playing on TV and, you know, we're written up in a bunch of different publications, ranging from sports performance to medical side of it, and things are falling outside of it, you can bet that Eric and I and Alan are looking into it. You know, we're trying to get better because it falls outside of what we're doing doesn't mean that we're going to automatically, you know, put it aside. You know, we're trying to figure out what's best. And if you're a kid or a parent, there's no excuse. Honestly, I got to put it on those guys. There's no excuse not to just ask questions. Eric is incredibly responsive to email, always has been. Alan has been too. And I am on Twitter and email. We have a dedicated support team to talk about that. You know, you can always ask questions about a different school or a program or what they think about certain things. And all of us are willing to put it on the line, you know, and help these kids and help the parents and help agents, honestly. Just give them a straight dope about what's going on. And if any of us don't know something, you know, I've never known Eric or Alan to be a guy that's, too arrogant and say that they have it all figured out or their way is the only way. And I think that's what makes a good coach. Someone who's secure in what they're doing and feels good about the results they have, but is also open-minded enough to integrate other things. And that's just kind of what I would say that the best dads that I've ever met are, the best kids that I've ever met to play the game, and best professional athletes. You know, they're they have a lot of conviction in what they're doing is right, but they're not so bullheaded that they're not going to, you know, solicit other opinions and try to get better on the things that they feel like they need to get better on. And that's my biggest thing right now. There's no excuse. 10 years ago, maybe there was an excuse. Today, you could reach out to anybody, Twitter, email, phone calls, text messages. The resources are out there. So to not know is really frustrating. And so just doing your research and getting on top of that is really important. All three people on the call here would be more than happy to talk to any well-meaning father who wants the best for their son. I guarantee you that.
That's it. And I'm going to send them right to the websites. We're talking JaggerSports.com, CressySportsPerformance.com, and DrivelineBaseball.com. If you're interested in connecting with either Alan, Eric, or Kyle, go to those sites, coaches, do some research, get on the website and just see what they're doing, what they're teaching, and reach out to them if you got further questions. Guys, you are all three rock stars. I cannot be more thankful for your time. Obviously, your dedication to the ABCA over the years is much appreciated. But moving forward, as we're approaching the summer months, we know you're going to stay busy. We were talking before we got recording. Things are getting ready to amp up for all of you. But I wish you the best of luck. Thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball, and we hope to connect again here real soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you
having us.
Thanks a lot.
Wow, just outstanding information, true audio gold for you guys, and we hope you took some notes or just hit rewind and re-listen to that tremendous show from three of the most prominent thought leaders in their respective fields in Alan Jaeger from Jaeger Sports, Eric Cressy from Cressy Sports Performance, and Kyle Bodie from Driveline Baseball. Huge thanks to those guys for making time to join our calls from the Clubhouse podcast. All three are passionate about what they are doing for the game of baseball. All three are highly motivated on educating coaches and players, helping each and every player reach their full potential. And all three are longtime supporters of the ABCA. So thanks again, Al, Eric, and Kyle. We appreciate your time and your insight. We wish you nothing but the best moving into the summer months. And now, on behalf of our podcast sponsor, AstroTurf, let's connect with Gene Stevenson, the legendary coach at Wichita State University, who has embraced an ultra-positive relationship with AstroTurf over the years and helped put in the very first college baseball turf surface. Let's connect with Gene right now. Well, Gene, thanks for taking some time with us today. We're going to talk through AstroTurf, and obviously from your perspective, legendary head coach at Wichita State, you guys actually put in the first AstroTurf college baseball field. Talk us through that experience, how everything fell into place, and getting that brand new surface there at Wichita State.
Well, you know, we started the program in the fall of 1977 so that we'd have a team first on the field, a field, in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was that we didn't have a place to practice. We didn't even have a practice field.
Oh, wow.
So we actually practiced on the marching band practice field. And but we had third divvies on that deal. That was
sure.
Behind the marching band and behind the club soccer program. Baseball got to go out there on just a vacant football field.
Right.
Was, and try to practice. So obviously, we needed something to try to recruit players to. And mm-hmm. one thing at that time, since we had no maintenance crew, we had nobody to take care of the fields and stuff, we decided that it would be best served for everybody involved if we had an AstroTurf infield.
Wow.
And of course, that had been a relatively new product in mm-hmm. the mid-70s and something that college baseball didn't have. And so it was a unique situation. You'd never get a bad hop. That was our recruiting tool.
Sure.
And it was always going to be fast and play fast so that if you were a good hitter and could drive some ground balls through the infield, you'd get through faster.
Yep.
You know, the one thing I learned long, long time ago is that you try to focus on what you have, not
sure.
what you don't have. So people always wondered how in the world we could recruit players to a program that didn't exist in a cold climate with no players anywhere in the vicinity there. And it just was the fact we focused more on what we had, mm-hmm. which wasn't much, but we did that and we were able to get players to come.
Awesome. That is outstanding. It's always good to hear the humble beginnings, right, of a program that obviously had tremendous status across the country. Now, using that facility and having that turf at your disposal, talk to us about the transition. Again, you talked about the recruiting effects of it, but the transition of teams coming in, them playing against it. Obviously, you recruited to that style of play. Talk us through those many years that you spent there on the AstroTurf field.
Well, speed was very important to us. I mean, obviously, you can do a lot of good things with speed in baseball, and we were able to do some really wonderful things defensively and offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that having the field there to begin with, and we changed it out about every 10 years or so and made it a little, it was a better product every time we changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we went initially from the very first product that was very hard and bounced high mm-hmm. and fast and was only in the infield. We always were able to play. And we played in a lot of inclement weather,
mm-hmm.
obviously, located where we were. But again, each time that we made an improvement, which I think we put down in 78, first turf, moved into second turf in 88, the third turf in 2000, the last turf that we put down was in 2010. Every year it was better. Every year it was better. And we went to a full field turf for the 2010 deal.
Wow.
And everybody who now is involved with the game, the college coaches and such, marveled at that field and how it played. It played just like spring training baseball field in Florida or Arizona. True hops, real bounces as if it were on a real field.
Mm-hmm.
And people who came in all wanted one like it. Vanderbilt came in, for example, when they were right there at the top of the country, and they wanted a new field to match ours. And he had his done exactly as we did ours. I mean, cut the same color dirt look in the infield and the warning track. So the field has been imitated many times over already. Sure. Since in the last 7 or 8 years.
That is so cool. And you've got to see it come in, like you mentioned, from carpet, and that just kept improving. And obviously what they do now for so many fields across the country, it's no mow, no grow, no H2O. That's the beauty of turf.
It's just like the best grass you'll ever play on.
Sure.
Absolutely. And when you dive on it, this is the best part. When you dive on it, there's no abrasion.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
That is too
awesome.
Cool. Absolutely. Well, you know, again, you're working now as a consultant with AstroTurf. And again, for any coach that's out there listening, Gene, what would you offer that coach that's going, you know what, I think this is the route we want to go, but I'm just not sure? How do you knock them over the fence to join the AstroTurf family?
It's by far the best product that is on the market, and they will build it how you want it. That's the great thing about it. I wanted it to play like a spring training field would play. They made it that way.
Mm.
I didn't want black rubber to be flying up, so they have the root system in. I didn't want a situation where there was a different feel at different places within the same diamond.
That is awesome. Well, Coach, we're very thankful for your time. Love the fact you're out there spreading the great word about AstroTurf, and especially what they do for us, sponsoring our calls on the Clubhouse Podcast. Coach, thanks for being on the call with us today.
All righty. Thank you, sir.
Always great to connect with a coaching legend. Thanks again, Coach Stevenson, for your time and positive words about our great friends over at AstroTurf. Now, if you want more information, give these folks a call. Check out their website, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com, and find out why they've been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. Now remember, guys, this podcast is for you. These are perfect for car rides or bus trips, the workouts, you're mowing some grass, anywhere and everywhere that you find this fits into your schedule. Connect with some of the best baseball minds in our game through our podcast. Here's how you stay updated on every episode we're putting out. Number one, head over to iTunes or Google Play, subscribe to our show. Get this to show up on your iPhone or your Android device. It's an absolute no-brainer. Every Tuesday we put a new show out, you'll have it at a fingertip's reach. Number two, stay plugged into our website, abca.org. Click on the education tab at the top. Call us on the Clubhouse Podcast link. We'll be right there waiting for you. You can see all the guests and content we put out. You can click on the one you want to hear that moment. Also, number three, guys, give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. We'll always announce the release of our show. We'll pull some of the best quotes from it and release those throughout the week so that you can retweet and like and spread the great word about this podcast. And again, that's how you stay up to speed on all those releases and stay ahead of the game in terms of getting this great audio gold. Now, looking ahead to this coming Monday, May 29th, plug into your Twitter account and let's all connect on our next hashtag ABCA chat. If you're wondering what that is, this is where coaches from all over the world check in to engage and network, connect with each other while we're all sharing info and insight. You can add your own. You're checking out what other coaches in the game are teaching. There's retweets and likes flying all over the place. And it's been a powerful platform for us to help grow the game, but also grow our coaches, enhance their development. And it's only for an hour. It'll be well worth your attendance to check in on our next hashtag ABCA chat Monday, May 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We hope to see you check in and join our chat. And again, make sure you're following us on Twitter. That's at ABCA1945. Membership information, messages from some of our sponsors, coaching articles and insight, plus this great podcast information. But make sure you're on there with us. You can also find me on there as well, at Coach Sheets 3. You can reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Keep those tweets and emails coming, guys. We truly appreciate each and every one of you listening in each week, connecting with these great coaches. We hope that you're learning as much as we are, the powerful insight from these outstanding baseball minds. Guys, stay tuned. The hits are just going to keep on coming for you. Stay locked into our show. Lastly, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association and the over 8,000 coaches worldwide that we represent. We hope that if you're listening to this show, you've already joined the Baseball Coaches Fraternity. But if you haven't, head over to abca.org, check out our extensive membership benefits for yourself, learn about all the great things we're doing for our coaches and for our game. And as always, as we sign off, thank you guys for listening in, staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Until next week, keep growing, keep developing. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.